Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
For more in-depth perspectives and interesting stories, sign up for our daily newsletter at tvo.org/daily.
Events in the U.S. and here have recently prompted perhaps an unprecedented conversation about the role of police in society. It's not something anyone has all the answers for, but in the search for solutions, we've got a smart bunch assembled to shed light on all of it for us. And so, as is our custom here on the agenda, we introduce our guests from furthest away to closest to our station, beginning in Calgary, Alberta, with Chad Haggerty, formerly an RCMP officer, currently a student at law, with Craig Hooker Shiskin Criminal Defense. In London, Ontario, Stephen Williams, Chief of the London Police Service. And here in the provincial capital, in downtown Toronto, Akwasi Owusu-Bempa, Assistant Professor in the Department of Sociology at the University of Toronto. And in the Wychwood neighborhood, here in Midtown Toronto, Farida Adam, staff lawyer at the Black Legal Action Center. And it's good to welcome all of you onto TVO tonight. And Chief Williams, you won't be surprised to hear that I want to start with you. It's been about 4 months since the killing of George Floyd in Minnesota that launched a kind of a racial reckoning around policing. Do you think the role of the police since then has changed? And if so, how?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not so sure the role of the police per se has changed in the last several months. Certainly the conversation has started into what we should, could, or shouldn't be doing. I think there's always going to be a need for those core services provided by police services with relation to crime prevention, law enforcement, emergency response, things like that. That's what the community expects, and that's what we're legislated to provide to citizens. But the conversation is clearly about those gray areas. So we've talked a lot about mental health, homelessness, addiction, issues like that, which is a bit of a gray area. We are in many communities across the province and across the country, the only 24/7 response when people need assistance. And quite often when our officers attend calls for service, these issues are at play. And police may not always be the most appropriate response. So that's where the conversation is heading, as to how we can more effectively deal with these issues that intersect with criminal justice, but may not be a criminal justice problem.
And I do want to follow up on that part of the conversation. But before we get there, one thing surely has changed. And that is, I think we've been doing this program 15 years. You may be the first active police officer on this program, not in uniform. I think every chief we've had on in the past has always wanted to wear the uniform. And interestingly enough, you chose not to today. How come?
Well, interesting question. You know, I'm aware of the uniform, and I take a lot of pride in what the uniform means to myself as a 28-year officer and what it represents for policing, which I'm very proud of. But I know the uniform is also not always perceived in that light by many others. And one thing that I message to my staff and out in the community is that, you know, we're human beings, we're citizens, and we're regular people as well. So, you know, it's okay to show that. And sometimes the way that manifests is wearing a suit or wearing, you know, civilian clothing. And so that's part of the decision. But by no means am I not proud of the uniform, and I do wear it on an almost daily basis.
Not the most important question I'm going to ask tonight, but I thought it was an interesting choice on your behalf, which is why I just wanted to touch on it for a moment. Chad, you're the only other former officer here with us this evening, and so let me go to you second. You heard the chief give a bit of a list there of things that are being rethought right now, how the police do what they do. Do you think, generally speaking, we ask the police to do too much?
Absolutely. I think that police officers are going into situations that they don't have the proper training for. In many instances, dealing with those individuals who are suffering with mental health issues or addictions issues, other life issues that aren't generally in the purview of police officer duties or shouldn't be. They currently are. And there are things, as the chief said, that police officers need to do and only police officers can do. in the last 4 months, we've had a lot of talk about defunding police and limiting what they do and using some of the police budget to fund other agencies to do things that they should be doing. We haven't seen any substantive change in any police force across Canada. They're still trying to maintain, the sphere of influence that they have.
Farida, I'll go to you next. We have, as Chad rightly just suggested, we've heard efforts to have the police reformed. We've heard efforts to have the police defunded. We've even had, in some circumstances, efforts to have the police abolished entirely. Which path are you inclined to be on?
You know, I think from our perspective, when we're talking about dealing with what's happening to the Black community and the Indigenous community in terms of Black death, the loss of Black life, I think the Black Legal Action Center is closer to the spectrum of transforming the policing as we know it in this province. So that does include defunding the police, meaning taking resources away from the police and investing them in agencies who may be better equipped to do this. And I think part of that also includes reimagining police. So it's not just about militarizing. It's not about dismantling. It's also about thinking about our relationship with each other and getting to the roots of how we address things like crime. What are our concepts of justice? What are our concepts of fairness? From the Black Legal Action's perspective, it's a robust conversation, but we definitely adhere to the defund position.
Kwasi, maybe you could follow up on that and help us understand what we mean, because I have certainly heard activists say we need to defund the police as a means of punishing them. In other words, taking away responsibilities from them. On the other hand, I have heard the expression defund the police used, meaning the police just are not the best people to carry out this function. And therefore, we need to take that money not to punish police, but to more appropriately spend it on others who can better perform those tasks. Help us understand what your understanding of what all of this means.
Well, I think we're hearing all of the things that you've said and more. And I particularly appreciate a term that one of my colleagues kind of lended to me, which is actually detasking the police. I think, you know, what we've acknowledged that is that the police are doing too much and that their budgets reflect that. And we want to take away some of those tasks. And importantly, we know that when we have the police engage in activities that they're not the best organization or institution to engage in, we have a number of negative consequences that might flow from that. One being the criminalization of people that might not otherwise be criminalized. So we can think about this in the context of homelessness with respect to drug use when we've got police in schools, but also, of course, in relation to the use of force as well. So I particularly like, I'm using the term and in the work that I'm doing in the area, use detasking the police, which recognizes that we're going to, you know, take some of the tasks away from the police and that there will be a corresponding reduction in the police budget to go along with that. And this isn't new. This has been acknowledged by the Canadian Associations of Chiefs of Police. This has been acknowledged by the Canadian government and in other Western nations long before the current conversations around defunding the police emerged as they have now.
Chief Williams, given the way that it has just been described by Kwasi, are you on side with that kind of transformation?
Well, I love the word detask. And, our last speaker was quite correct that it has been discussed about at the CACP level and in the Ontario Association of Chiefs of Police level provincially. And, mental health is a really good example of a file that the police did not ask for. But again, as the only, quite often the only 24/7 response, it falls into our lap. And we have said for a number of years that police are not always the appropriate agency to respond to many of these calls. With adequate support from the provincial level, then maybe these calls wouldn't come to us in the first place. But as it sits right now, many of these calls for service, from what we hear through our community partners, you know, there is still a role for the police often to attend in some capacity, not always, but often there is. And that doesn't necessarily mean it has to be a police-led response, though. So, you know, the partnerships with the community and the, a health-led response for many of these calls for service is entirely appropriate. And that's the direction we need to head in. And we would hope that would result in corresponding savings within our budget as our officers are you know, redeployed to those core policing needs that I spoke about.
Akwasi, let me come back to you on the quest for consensus here. You know, in the days after the George Floyd, well, killing, murder, call it what you want, in the days after that, the Minneapolis City Council actually voted to defund the police significantly. And there seemed to be a consensus around that among activists, the community, and the political leadership of the time. You have subsequently seen in the last few weeks a significant attempt by the Minneapolis Council to reverse its decision, saying that they made the decision in haste or they didn't quite understand the full implications of what they were suggesting. All of which is to say this clearly is more complicated than at first blush. I want to know from you where you see overlapping interests between police, community, political leadership. Do you see a sweet spot of consensus anywhere?
Well, I think the consensus should be that all of those parties play a role in fostering, you know, public and community safety. And I think the decision to roll back, you know, the reduction in the proposed cuts was simply a fact of not having examined the situation closely enough. You know, here in Toronto, we had a motion before City Council to defund the police by 10%. And while I'm fully in support of a reduction in funds, I think that this needs to be done in a sensible manner. And as a social scientist, I would first want to see, you know, exactly what it is that the police are doing that they shouldn't be, and what agencies are there to fill that void or which need to be created. And in order to do that, we'd need to examine police calls for service. We'd need to examine the budgets. And until we do that, and we do a bit of asset mapping to see what is out there to fill this void, we can't just, you know, ad hoc or at whim decide to cut a police budget by 25 or 50%. The goal should be a reduction in those budgets. And as I've said, the removal of some of the tasks and functions, but we need to do this in a sensible, a thoughtful and careful manner so as not to further, jeopardize public and community safety.
Farida, can I get your view on that, on whether it's possible to find a consensus among political leadership, community leadership, police leadership? Is that doable?
I think it's doable if we center the people who are being disproportionately impacted by police brutality and violence. So if we start there and say we are talking about transforming the system, not only in terms of policing folks as we understand it traditionally, but including child welfare, including having police officers in schools, if we're saying we're starting with a lens that focuses on Indigenous communities, that focuses on Black communities, I think that we can start with, we can come to a consensus there. So if we start from a position of care, then we can sort of think about what sustainably and intelligently can we do in order to address some of these issues meaningfully.
Chad, I need to get you to weigh in on this because, of course, we do hear some voices that say abolish the police altogether. And we hear other voices saying that's ridiculous. When there's a break-in at your home, you got to call somebody. Where do you find the sweet spot of consensus with two such divergent views?
I think it's important to realize that, as everybody seems to agree, there is a role for police in society. One of the things that we're overlooking is the conversation can't be a fair conversation until police have appropriate oversight. At present, police budgets are hidden from view, police leadership and management hidden from view. Police acts across Canada, including the RCMP Act federally, need to be revamped and changed so that the average public person, the average citizen, has the ability to examine what the police officers are doing. As has been said, until we open up and see exactly what police officers are up to, this isn't a fair conversation.
Chief Williams, do you think there's inadequate oversight of the police activities?
Well, I've certainly heard that those comments before, but I can tell you that policing in Ontario specifically is probably one of the most overseen public bodies there is. Several levels of oversight and scrutiny, and the police chiefs have never denied the need for that, and we accept the scrutiny that comes with being a professional policing service. It's a slow process quite often, the oversight, and we've heard a lot about the Special Investigations Unit and the length of time their investigations take, but there is quite a bit of oversight.
I would like, Farida to weigh in on that as well. There is, in fact, the SIU, the Special Investigations Unit, You know, you could complain to the ombudsman as well. Do you think there's adequate oversight of the police in this province?
You know, I don't think so. Especially, you know, from our perspective, we have the Black Legal Action Center offers legal services for folks who have complaints against the police. The majority of our files are related to excessive use of force. And so when our clients come to us, essentially what they're doing is they're saying, let's go to the OIPRD, the Office of the Independent Investigative Director. So the OIPRD is supposed to hold police officers accountable based on the police officer's code of conduct. And oftentimes, if there is something found to be inappropriate, it's referred back to the police service to investigate themselves. And so although there are mechanisms to hold police officers accountable broadly, the question is, how is that done? And so there is a perspective, I think, that feels as though police officers are holding themselves accountable. And so the question would be, is that meaningful? Is that real accountability?
And your answer is no.
No.
Akwasi, what's your answer on that?
Yeah, I think we're very fortunate in Canada and Ontario to have the structures in place that we do at the moment. But I think in some respects, the institutions that we have to foster police don't necessarily have enough teeth or power. They're not always staffed by the right individuals. And I think we still put too much onus on police services themselves to, you know, bring cases to, for example, the SIU, the case of DeFonte Miller, very recently here in the GTA being case in point, one in which an egregious beating of a young Black man came to the attention of the police service that the officer involved worked for, and that service did not bring the case to the SIU. So I think, you know, we have a good structure in place, but there's work that could be done in this respect, in this province and this country.
Okay. Let me steer our conversation now to how, going forward, police might be doing things differently. And Chief Williams, I'll start with you again on this one. If there's one area which, you know, we hear from the police that they acknowledge they're not the best at and that they might need help at, it's trying to deal with mental health crises. Can you tell us whether or not over the past year, let's say, the London Police Service has responded to mental health crises in ways different now than they might have 5 or 10 years ago?
Well, I think we're seeing a change, but it's a slow evolution, but it's a very important evolution. So just to give you a bit of context, we respond to approximately 3,000 mental crisis calls a year in my community. And about 750 times per year, our officers apprehend an individual under the provisions of the Mental Health Act. And that's not something they choose to do or want to do, but quite often they're the only service available, as I've alluded to, and they're forced into a position. But that's not always the most appropriate response. Anytime somebody is apprehended, then that presents a situation for potential conflict and potential use of force. And let me first say that most of those incidents are resolved peacefully. They are, in fact, de-escalated, and the public often doesn't hear about them. But there are some that do not turn out well, and those are the ones that that people hear about. Having said that, what we're moving towards to in London and other communities, several have as well, is a co-response model where some of our officers are partnered with a mental health practitioner from the community. Both the officer and the mental health professional would have some specialized training, and they would intervene in those calls for service that may not require a police-led response. They may require police presence or that to be among the menu of options. But it's really a health-led or a community-led response. And our goal is to divert those individuals who are in crisis away from the criminal justice system, away from situations where they need to be apprehended, towards more appropriate community-based responses. And the ultimate goal is to prevent the call from service from occurring in the first place. So the real question is not what we can do for the person at the time, but what could have been done a week ago, a month ago, to prevent that call for service from coming in. So that's the proactive component of the model that I'm talking about. So that's the change that we're moving towards in London. And I think it's very important in the evolution of policing.
Chad, a co-response. How do you like the sounds of that?
I do like the sound of that. A co-response. When I was policing, we took that approach with social services in various scenarios. One of the things that the term detasking has been used. I'll go back to defunding. The chief talks about proactive things. What could have been done a week ago or a month ago? Stripping police budgets, which are in every jurisdiction by far the largest budget a municipality has to deal with. Stripping those budgets back to their core, well, that will provide the funding to allow social services agencies to come in and be proactive. I appreciate the chief's position. I appreciate the initiatives that they're doing. But if he truly wanted to contribute to proactive things in the community that would address these issues, finding ways to cut his budget back so that other agencies can be properly funded would be a great thing to do.
Well, Chad, let me just follow up with you, because if we're talking about a co-response where a police officer shows up, maybe in a supporting or backup role to a mental health professional, it still sounds like you need that officer on that job, and that presumably means you can't defund. Have I got that wrong?
To some degree. So the way it would work now, and the chief can obviously correct this, but when there's a call for service now, if it's not a cooperative response, you would have multiple officers responding. And generally, from an officer safety point of view, if you're going to something where there's potential for an escalation in the physical interaction, multiple officers will attend. If things change and we get to the point where we don't need a police officer to attend, then we can look at defunding. Ambulance calls for service very often have police backup if it's a volatile situation. But there's a process by which call receivers can undertake risk management and determine whether or not police officers need to attend the call. We could do the same thing in mental health calls.
Okay, Farida, let me follow up with you on that. If, in fact, the police officer is still needed to play a supporting role to a mental health professional as both co-respond to a crisis, where's the opportunity for defunding the police in that scenario?
Well, defunding the police is really an intelligent process in which you're assessing who is best equipped to deal with a particular issue. So there is going to be some risk assessment at the upfront. So you're going to have to assess the call, assess what the person's calling for, what the needs are, and whether or not you need an emergency response. Now, it could be that you need an emergency response, and we can talk about later what an emergency response would look like in a defund model. But that doesn't take away the possibility of defunding. Defunding, from our perspective, actually asks us to ask those hard questions on the upfront. So why is this person calling? What kinds of threats are they posing, if at all? And who is best equipped to deal with it?
Okay, I take your point. In which case, I mean, let's follow it up right now. A different kind of emergency response, the likes of which you imagine, as opposed to what's happening right now, what does that look like in your world?
Well, for us, it looks like it's kind of similar to what we have in terms of these mobile crisis early intervention teams that already go around. They're not 24/7. They're essentially mental health nurses who accompany police officers. Police officers are still the first responders. And from our perspective, that's part of the issue. You know, I think about Regis Korchinski Paquette, and I wonder if you had a mental health nurse respond as opposed to officers who are armed, multiple officers who are armed, would that outcome would that have been different for Ms. Paquette? And I think the answer is potentially yes. So I think that, you know, sometimes when we talk about defunding police, folks think that it's sort of like a sort of messy, sloppy process, when it's really about looking at police budgets, seeing where those funds are allocated, and seeing if they can be better funded and better allocated in the hope of preserving Black life and Indigenous life. And so I envision an emergency response team that is not completely different from what we have now, but just removing the police officer as being the first responder. I think that that would go a long way in terms of building some community trust and faith when someone calls and they're in a crisis.
Just before I get others to comment on that, we should just by way of background say the Korchinski Paquette situation was a woman in crisis in Toronto's West End who ran out onto her balcony and in an attempt to jump to another balcony didn't make it and tragically fell to her death. I think the police would want me to say that the family called the police in. The police were there because the family called them in. And there, I guess there is some kind of debate, maybe Akwasi come in here on this, there may be some kind of debate as to whether or not the presence of uniforms exacerbated the situation. There was an investigation of it, and there was no suggestion at all that the police played any role in her death. Now, that's the official story. Akwasi, if you want to pick it up and make your comments, now's the time.
So, of course, recent events here in Toronto in relation to people in mental health crisis and also instances of social unrest, the presence of police officers with uniforms, with guns, with their vehicles can certainly exacerbate situations and lead to death, perhaps as they did in the Regis Kitchissi-Paquette situation. But I think one of the things that we need to acknowledge here that hasn't yet been discussed is the preventative aspect of this detasking and defunding conversation, because basically we've got ourselves into the situation we're in now with the police responding to so many different types of social problems, precisely because funding has been cut from other social areas, right? Mental health, homelessness, youth programming. And so by taking the funds away from the police and giving them back to those other social institutions, organizations, and agencies, the hopes would also be that that would have a preventative effect so that the police wouldn't actually need to respond to, nor would another agency need to respond to, so many mental health crises, so many people experiencing homelessness, to issues related to drug use and the likes, because there would be less presence of that in our society and on our streets at the front end rather than the back end, which is largely what the police end up doing.
You're talking about upstream versus downstream problems, and I totally take your point, which takes us back to Chief Williams. As we consider detasking the police services of this province, Chief Williams, maybe put this on the table. What are the things that we absolutely need the police to do for which there are no other alternative agencies or services, in your view?
Well, I think it goes back to the core responsibilities of police services, which is legislated, and a lot of it's pretty obvious. It's law enforcement, it's emergency response, crime prevention, assisting victims, and things like that. And the police officers in Ontario are very, very well trained and very well equipped to do these things, and by and large, do an amazing job. They serve their communities well. And the vast majority of incidents, like I've indicated, are resolved peacefully. And the resolved professionally. And we have to keep that in mind. So those core services are still required. And, you know, anytime we do any type of public survey, we consistently receive that information that they want the police presence in neighborhoods for that preventative sense and that safety and security feeling. And they want us to have the ability to respond 24/7 when somebody calls 911. I think that will forever remain, and that's what the communities want. So it's the other areas that we talked about, the health issues, the homelessness issues that fall upon the police, again, because quite often nobody else is answering the call in many communities. And we do need to detask the police of those issues.
We're about 4 minutes to go here, and Farida, let me get you to follow up on that. Do you agree with Chief Williams' list of what we absolutely, positively, at a bare minimum, need the police to do in this province on a day-to-day basis?
You know, I respectfully disagree. I think that, you know, from our perspective, this conversation is not just about defunding, but reimagining policing. I think the question that we have to ask ultimately is, can we imagine a society where we do have community policing, we have public safety, but in a way that is done where we don't have armed police officers who are involved in the sense that they are responding to things that they may not be equipped to do? So from our perspective, it's not just about defunding, it's about reimagining policing. And I think that there is a difficulty in reimagining policing because we live in a society that is predicated in many ways in looking to police in times of crises. And so what we're asking people to do is think about alternatives. Are there alternative models that we can look to, other jurisdictions that we can look to, where policing is happening in a way that folks aren't potentially in harm's way? I think of the UK. I think of jurisdictions where police officers aren't armed, for example. That is one step to that in that conversation, to progress that conversation.
Chad Haggerty, does that suggestion as part of a reimagined police package, does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ms. Adam hit the nail on the head. Chief William came in, wasn't wearing his uniform because he understands that that creates a certain response. Yet when he's asked, how should we detask? He lists essentially everything that police do now. when police try to reimagine policing, they imagine it in the same context that it always has been. Civilian oversight, civilian interaction, and civilian direction is something that we need to seriously consider and begin doing.
Stephen Williams, can you imagine your officers doing their jobs without carrying firearms?
Well, unfortunately, I don't think that's feasible right now, given the way the legislation is and the calls for service that they're required to attend to. We have a number of officers who are not in uniform, and the mental health model that I spoke about, we didn't get into the details, but does not involve uniform officers. So we're very alive to that issue. But I think, you know, the reality is that there are weapons on the streets. There are criminals on the streets who the public expects us to deal with when we're called, and police officers need to be trained and equipped to do so. That doesn't mean that other officers can't do crime prevention functions and, you know, education and awareness and proactive work, and that's happening now.
Akwasi and I here, can you imagine a reimagined police service where weapons are not carried?
I can. Not carried by all officers, perhaps. Even in the United Kingdom, there are, of course, rapid response teams that are armed, and they do at times, and it's much more rare than in Canada, end up shooting individuals, some of whom are also themselves unarmed. But I do think, and I, you know, we had this conversation a year and a half or so ago, I think we need to drastically reimagine how we engender public safety, community safety, and what policing is. Policing is something that has existed within our societies now for millennia. And, you know, the policing that we have now is a product of our time. It does not have to be a product of our future. And I think we need to think as communities, as societies, and as institutions about how we, moving forward, engender public safety in a way that includes some kind of law enforcement agency, but also, I think, puts greater emphasis on other social institutions, organizations, and importantly on us as citizens in a society.
I want to thank Akwasi Owusu-Bempa from the U of T, Farida Adam from Black Legal Action Center, Stephen Williams, the Chief of Police for the City of London, and Chad Haggerty, the former RCMP officer, now a student at law, for a really smart and civilized discussion here on TVO tonight. Thanks so much, all four of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Agenda with Steve Paikin is brought to you by the Chartered Professional Accountants of Ontario. CPA Ontario is a regulator, an educator, a thought leader, and an advocate. We protect the public. We advance our profession. We guide our CPAs. We are CPA Ontario. And by viewers like you. Thank you.